So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Josh Feast, who is CEO, and founder of Cogito Corporation. Hi, Josh. How are you doing?
Hey, Adrian. Doing great, thanks.
Well, it's not very frequent that we have a Kiwi on the call. So it's nice to hear your dulcet tones today, Josh.
Well, there's not that many of us. Well, we like to think we hold a high standard, but we're definitely not frequent.
No. I think the last one was a lady who runs a personal assistant manager sort of application, which is quite cool. I think she was ex SAP, I think, in the US, but then she relocated back to New Zealand to become an entrepreneur and is taking the world by storm in that sort of field, which is very cool.
Wonderful.
Anyway. But back to you. Josh, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and tell us a bit about the work that you do?
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, I'm the CEO and founder of Cogito Corporation, and we're an artificial intelligence and behavioral science company based in Boston. And our focus is on helping people have more effective voice conversations. In terms of myself, I was trained as an engineer and a technologist. I'm a father of two boys. As you pointed out, I'm a native of New Zealand, although I've been based here in the US for a little over a decade.
Fantastic. So now, I know that I was kind of doing some research into Cogito before we talked, and I see that from the About Us page on your website that you are linked to Dr. Alex Pentland of the MIT Media Lab and social physics fame. And that's fascinating. So I wonder if you could I can back up a little bit, and can you tell me a little bit about, you know, how that link came about? Because he's actually the co-founder, is that right?
Absolutely. Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, I think so. I'm happy to do it. I can almost start a little bit about what we do, and then sort of Sandy's, you know, major contribution will sort of become kind of crystal clear.
Okay, cool.
So the background to our focus is, as I said earlier, about how we can all people can have sort of more effective conversations with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of underlying principle is that most folk and also a lot of kind of supporting technologies have been brought into place to help us have more efficient conversations and ultimately to sort of solve a particular problem.
Right.
But what has been missing in this picture is that we also have conversations in order to create an emotional connection between each other.
Right.
And there's been a lot of research that's come out even recently which shows that it's the emotional connection, the trust, the rapport, the confidence you get from talking to somebody that's on the same wavelength as you,
uh-huh,
that ultimately inspires customers to stick with brands and helps people on the front line, you know, have much more pleasant conversations with customers in particular. And so this world of emotional connection is evidenced or created through the behavioral signals we send to each other.
Right.
So so I make opinions, or I form opinions about whether you're listening to me, whether you're paying attention to me, whether you're confident or expert in the subject you're speaking about from the manner in which you speak. And Sandy Pentland did a whole lot of important research in this field of behavioral science, looking at how what he calls honest signals, which is the social signal or emotional substrate underneath the conversations, how that is sourced in different regions of the brain and how it's evidence in the behaviors that we show when we talk to each other, and then also how you can use those behaviors to predict outcomes.
Right.
And so the background sort of to our origin story is I was attending MIT. I had a background working with large organizations before I attended, and so I had seen some of the problems,
mm-hmm,
with how hard it is to kind of deal with people in a large organization, particularly deal with large groups of customers.
Yeah.
And most sort of origin stories are all about making a connection. And, I was fortunate enough to be exposed to his stream of research and was able to make a connection with the prior professional experience I'd had that had the eureka moment. And then Sandy and I partnered together to form Cogito.
Ah, Okay, so that so let me ask you a question on that with the idea around sort of the emotional connections, particularly the ones that, that's over the phone. And something because something occurred to me as you were talking. Is it that so one of the things you're trying to do, or rather, let's back away from what you're trying to do. Let's kind of focus on the actual kind of conversations to start with. Because there will be there is going to be a difference between a conversation that you have with somebody face to face, where you can see their face and their body language, and those are kind of signals as well, as opposed to the conversation that you have on the phone with somebody, where all you do is you hear the words that they use, their tempo, their tone, so on and so forth. So I guess there is a big, there can be a big gap between what people, the signals that people get. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So voice is actually a really interesting signal in general because, and if you contrast voice to say writing or texting, which is a learned skill, like texting and writing are actually are technologies.
Yes.
Voice, we do learn to speak as young children. We learn language, but it's much more hard coded in our brain than anything like writing, and so voice does have a very rich substrate of social signals within it.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, if you're face to face with somebody, there are absolutely additional signals that come through in facial expressions and movement. Interestingly, a lot of social signals between voice and in person are highly correlated. So for example, if you're agitated, it'll come through in your voice, but it will also come through in fidgeting and, you know, not being able to sit still and things like that. So there is some overlap between the two. But often it's true that one of the challenges of voice conversations and phone conversations is you need to transmit effectively this emotional substrate or social substrate in your conversation in order to be like very, very effective. And you don't have the benefit of being able to lock gazes and nod and things like that that you do in an in-person conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And also you don't really have the context of the person and all that sort of stuff as well. And so sometimes, and particularly if it's in a service environment, then actually that context can be really important because you've got to make the kind of, I guess, the snap decisions or snap reactions in terms of how you do things.
Yeah, you have to listen really carefully because the cues can be more subtle and because you don't have the full bandwidth.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more about, because, I mean, I understand now that you're using this sort of AI technology and it's very much around sort of voice and connections, very much in the customer service sort of space, but you use that there's an emotional, and there's a real-time emotional intelligence feedback mechanism.
That's right.
Can you tell me about how that works? Because that all sounds like it's a whole bunch of other sort of things kind of bolted together to create this massive kind of monster thing, which is going to it's going to solve the problems of the world.
We've had to solve like a whole lot of very different technical problems to get this all to work together for sure. But yeah, so how it works, I guess I'll give you maybe a couple of different layers. I mean, the lower level technology layer. So what's happening is that you have a large organization, for example, so the organization may have this challenge where it's got thousands of people on the front lines and it needs to help all those thousands of people speak to customers the way, you know, in the appropriate way, in the best, most effective way, consistently. Mm-hmm. And so that's often a presenting problem. And so what we do is we have a compute service that sits in the cloud and it listens to all the conversations going through a big call center, for example, as they're happening.
Right.
And it computes a variety of behavioral signals about those conversations. And then it presents information back to the frontline phone professional as they're speaking, which helps them adjust the way that they speak. So that's what we're doing from a sort of a systems perspective.
Right.
And then from a sort of a data perspective, we're doing two things. The first is, As a conversation is happening between the two parties, we're looking at the behavioral patterns, which is sort of the dance of a conversation.
Right.
Is really a way to think about it. And the signals that are within that dance tell us how well that conversation is going.
Right.
And so because we know how well the conversation is going.
Yes.
We also happen to know how it could be improved. And particularly if it's going, and also how we can observe if it's going off the rails a little bit. So then what we will do is, if we detect that it could be improved, We will give the frontline professional very, very concrete pieces of recommendations for how they can change. So we'll and you don't want something that's too high level. You want something that's very easy to take in and modify. So we'll say things to an agent, something like, you know, you're interrupting right now, or you know, you might be speaking too much, you know, sort of implying that you should maybe listen more at this point.
Right.
And we'll help somebody recognize if they're coming across as very low energy or very slow to respond. You know that sort of pregnant pause that's so frustrating?
Yes.
Oh, you know. Or we'll do things like help somebody in the front line who may have just done 50 calls on this exact topic.
Right.
Recognize the customer is, you know, feeling maybe a little more emotional right now, and may, or this is a very high stakes issue for the customer, and they could do with a little bit of empathy and compassion at this point. You know, those are the sorts of things that we do. So the translation into action is very concrete for the frontline professional, and the effect is that the behavior modifies,
uh-huh.
and then the customer has this wonderful feeling of talking to somebody who's very professional, very empathic, and then ultimately is much more satisfied with the conversation that they have.
Okay. So a couple of questions kind of just on that. I mean, one is that how does the technology respond to different types of languages? Because I just think, like, you know, and the reason I ask this is I know that there's, you know, different languages have and different kind of cultures have different ways of like approaching their language. In so, for example, there's an my assumption is that, or my understanding is that in English, your language ability is almost defined by kind of how your mastery of the language is defined by kind of almost your the how brief you are, the brevity of kind of the words that you use. But whereas, which is very, very different to something like, say, Arabic, which is all about flowery, and your mastery of the language is measured against kind of how many words you can use to describe something. Which
that's an interesting point. Yeah. So one of the things that's really interesting about this is that a lot of the behavioral signals that are most useful to help people with are properties of ourselves as humans or primates.
Right.
And less properties of ourselves as kind of cultural beings.
Right.
And the reason is that a lot of what you're doing when you're looking at the sort of the substrate of voice is you're, as a listener, you're intuiting essentially activity in different regions of the brain of the person you're speaking to. So if your attention mechanism is really, you know, you're really paying attention, you are able to respond very quickly to a question that somebody asks.
Uh-huh.
Almost, in order to be able to respond that quickly, you had to have been anticipating your response, so you had to have been paying attention. So there are a number of things that are really just properties of humans and not properties of us. So and actually the majority. So what that translates into is that the signals that matter between different cultures, between different social roles and conversations, tend to be common.
Right.
Sometimes there's a difference of degree or emphasis.
Right.
So what we do is when we engage in a very new context, we have a very brief period where we'll do a little bit of calibration around some of the models, and we'll do a little bit of testing. But it's surprisingly similar, which is kind of fascinating, actually.
So it kind of lives outside of kind of language, you know, specific languages, and it's more about almost the primal sort of levels of communication.
Exactly. Those are the things that we find we can, when we coach people on those in real time, and we, you know, bring their attention to things where they haven't realized how they're coming across, then we get the biggest impact.
Right. That's fascinating. So the next thing, just on a more practical kind of term, is like, so when the agent gets this feedback, I mean, do they have like a Babelfish thing speaking in their ear going, slow down, speed up, kind of like, say more? Or is it like a ticker thing on their screen? Or how does it work?
They have a little thing on their screen.
Okay.
So it looks almost like a little kind of text message window.
So
it'll say nothing at all when there's nothing to change.
Right.
And then when there's something you need to be aware of, you'll get a little wee message that appears.
Okay.
And then it will go away when that message will go away when the thing that it's trying to alert you to is no longer relevant.
Okay, perfect. And The other thing that you can talked about earlier, you talked about how you listen to the technology listens to all the calls, so then it's constantly learning and things.
Correct.
So the other thing, it's also just an issue that just, you know, is floating around right now, is around sort of privacy and all that type of stuff. I mean, so are you actually recording and archiving the conversation, or is it that you and using that as a reference database, or is this just all in real time?
Great question. So the technology does not require these calls to be recorded. So we can run very effectively just, you know, streaming and then discarding the voice as it happens. And we have a certain number of deployments where we don't record any audio. We just provide the sort of transient coaching information to the agents. And then we have other deployments where we do provide the service of recording calls in cases. And generally, pretty much all our deployments where that's the case, the calls are already being recorded.
Yeah.
It's that we happen to provide that more efficiently than maybe their current installed solution.
Yeah, and
but there's no fundamental reason. The general point you're raising, though, I think is, you know, a really important one. And obviously, there's a lot of debate going on now. You know, there used to be a lot of debate going on around big data, and now there's a lot of debate going around about sort of artificial intelligence and what are the implications of that. And it's something that we think, you know, deeply about at Cogito.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things, you know, that we really strive to do, and I think we've succeeded with this application, is always do things that are a true win-win-win.
Uh-huh.
So something where the organization, which is in this case buying our software, gets a win. You know, in this case, in our application, they get a win because they get better customer satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And that has downstream effects on whether people stick with them as customers.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want the solution to improve the working lives of employees.
Yes.
So that's a big focus for us. So we, you know, there's in the US, you know, alone, there are 5 million people that are frontline phone professionals. So it's a huge segment of the population.
Wow.
And we really are striving with this to improve, you know, their working lives, because a lot of technologies that have been delivered to that group have been really designed to turn the frontline into a database over a telephone.
Sure.
Which is not very pleasant. And all the challenges you have in that role around how do you deal with difficult or emotional customers, and you know, how do you stay resilient? And this is the sort of thing that this tool really helps with. And then the last part is, I think you really want something that's obviously good for customers.
Yes.
You know, I see a lot of technologies where they're trying to, they might do something good for the frontline employees, something good for, like, you know, gather a lot of information about customers or things like that, which is a little sort of scary.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do any of that. We're just focused on making sure that when the customer calls into customer service, they have a much more pleasant experience. So it's like a true win-win-win.
Yeah.
And you have to work to find these applications in this field. You know, it's very easy to just solve 2 out of 3.
Yes.
It's really easy.
So here's the thing, Josh. Then this all, I mean, that all sounds very, you know, it's all interesting and very exciting and things. And I think a great application, because it's helping agents be better at their job, which was going to make their life kind of better. And it's actually helping them be, you know, almost like it's like training in real time in many ways.
Exactly.
And actually,
yes,
it's giving customers what they want. They want that human connection sometimes when things go wrong or get complicated, or they want more of something. But can you give us a couple of examples of sort of how, sort of things that you've, problems that you've worked on with kind of different clients, and sort of a bit of context about what they were doing before, how you helped them change their approach, and the sort of benefits and results they're now seeing as a result of kind of, you know, implementing this type of a technology?
Yes, of course, delighted. So one sort of example use case, which is, you know, well, which is out in the public domain, mm-hmm. Which I think is very interesting, is the example of Humana, which is one of the largest health insurers in the US. And so Humana, they have a specialization and a large market share in dealing with a program called Medicare, which is senior healthcare. And so we've been working with them on their frontline, sort of, they call it Medicare and retirement group. And the central challenge of this group is that healthcare, so Yeah, health insurance is a good example because it deals with health and money, which are the two things that get people like most worked up, right? Those are the things that are essential to. And the other thing is that the healthcare system is often so overwhelming for people that they really need somebody they can trust to help them navigate it.
Sure.
And especially if it's one of their first times kind of having a health issue and they need to kind of figure out how to get through. And so from the perspective of a frontline phone professional, they're dealing with these exact same issues over and over and over again, maybe, 10 calls a day or 50 calls a day, sort of depending on, the particular part of the organization they work in.
Yeah.
But for the customer calling in, it's high stakes, highly emotional, and they really want this. They want somebody who cares about them and somebody who'll listen and who'll help them. And so one of the things that we did is we put the software out into the sort of frontline organization. We gave the software to certain people, and then we did not give the software to others, and sort of monitored the difference in performance.
Yeah.
We found that by adjusting the agent's behavior so that they were creating these personas that were more better listening, better empathy, the satisfaction rates from the customers increased by 28%, which is amazing because generally you're fighting for 1-2% improvement.
Over what sort of time frame?
This is over 3 or 4 months.
Wow.
So really, really fast. And it makes sense because the organization was so focused on policies and like efficiency and to just bring in this new thing about let's actually try and create a more scalable emotional connection. Just it's logical in hindsight.
Yes.
But really huge. But the thing that was really we were really thrilled about that. But the thing that we got that we also became really, really happy with was that the engagement rate from the employees, there's employee surveys about how much they're engaged in their own work as well.
Sure.
That improved by 66%.
66.
Yes. and this is amazing because I don't know if you know anything about, I know you know a lot about enterprise software and I'm sure your listeners do too, but typically people don't love new enterprise software, right?
No.
It's not generally something that you love, but because this was helping the frontline with the hardest part of their job, which is how do I create these emotional connections? How do I deal with emotional customers in an effective way.
Mm-hmm.
They really felt that it was helping them with a hard problem they had.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
That's very cool.
Yeah, we're really happy.
I mean, that's kind of like that is the kind of the win-win. Customers are happy. People are just as efficient. Your turnover goes down because your engagement kind of goes up. Blah blah blah. Jobs are good then. Right. So just let me kind of go back to something you kind of said earlier, because actually this is the thing that that you kind of talked about. I asked you about the privacy sort of thing, and you alluded to this whole kind of idea about people, big level of debate around privacy and AI and the impact and so on and so forth. Because I mean, this is something I've been sort of, exploring, because I recently wrote an article asking whether it's time to consider the balance of tech and the human touch in our service and experience, and what do we need to do to sort of do we need to consider it or reconsider it or just continue to consider it? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, are we in danger of going on too far with some of the hyperbole that's surrounding AI right now?
Well, I think there's sort of in my space there's sort of two parts of it. So the first is I think that there can be a bit of a confusion and the confusion comes because people don't realize there's a fundamental difference between service and self-service.
Right.
And it's easy, and it's actually easy to get mixed up, because if you're only thinking about how I'm going to solve the customer's problem and how I'm going to do that in the most efficient way, then self-service and service looks kind of the same,
sure.
Right? They're just like, we're just trying to solve a problem. It doesn't matter how we solve it.
Yeah.
And if you look at it through that lens, then it's easy to blur the two. But in actual fact, the customer experiences self-service and service very differently, it's really the differences in the emotional journey.
Right.
So when a customer engages in self-service, you're really giving them tools for them to solve the problem themselves, which mm-hmm. means that's what self-service means. So as a customer, you're still carrying the monkey on your back.
Right.
When you're engaging in service, you have an experience of being able to take that monkey off your back and give it to somebody else, which is why trust is so important. And generally, the service experience is really much more about this emotional journey. I'm going to have somebody deal with something for me. That person is going to be more expert than I in the space. And that person is also going to help me satisfy, right? Because as a customer, I don't want to just be endlessly searching and endlessly optimizing for something that's important. I want to talk to somebody. I want to have somebody who is expert, who I can trust.
Yeah.
Can help me pick the right decision, right? And I want that, and I have to know it's the right decision. So I have to have faith in that person.
Yes.
And right now we aren't able to like place our trust in an AI bot, right?
Yes.
And we're not, because it turns out AI, and this is I guess the point, is it overblown? It's not overblown in the sense that there are true fundamentally cool things coming out of AI, right? That we really are advancing using this stuff, but nobody should think that an AI bot has a representation of the world in its head, right?
Yes.
It doesn't know, AI bots don't know how the world works. They know how certain data has been in the past. It's a very, very different thing. So that's why we can't trust an AI bot. And so for that reason, until there's some, you know, really huge shift in technology, which has not happened yet,
mm-hmm.
you know, the service and service experience is still fundamental and should be, and I guess it's mixed up at the it's a perilous thing to do to mix the two concepts together.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the thing, is like somebody sent me a question earlier on around, and they were talking about, you know, is AI going to be the topic of 2017, or are we going to see some sort of, you know, the rise of the Terminator bots type of thing? And I was like, I said to them, I said, like, but the problem with the conversation around AI is we're talking in such general terms and we're not talking about specific applications.
Exactly.
So AI is AI, and that's, you know, fine, and it's all interesting and exciting, and there's a world of possibilities. But actually, until we get to the point where we actually start breaking it down into specific applications and then understand what the impact of those applications are, then we can start having more substantive conversations rather than just ruling something out or battling against something just because of what it is or what it could be. So let's deal with, kind of, rather than deal with the art of the possible, let's deal with the art of the probable.
Yeah, that's right. And the art of fixing problems right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And so it's an interesting thing. I mean, without a doubt, the advances that are being made, I mean, I think that they're quite exciting, but I'm also one skeptical and have reservations about some of the trajectories mm-hmm. that were going on and some of the things that people are talking about. But I think their possibilities are it's incredible and very exciting. And I want to see people having, I don't know, more grown up conversations in the general sort of industry about sort of the application of kind of AI.
I agree. Yeah, I think you're right. I think, I think the two, I guess it's kind of two answers. I think that technologists, you know, sometimes they don't always do the world a good service in the sense that they're really beholden on technologists to, you know, really think about what society wants and needs, not
yes.
just do something, you know, that you know, either somebody's done before or looks shiny, but really, really think about that. And I think, and not just do something and put it out there, but actually, you know, really design a solution. So I feel like we don't ask enough of our technologists and software designers. Everyone should sort of aspire for more in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think related to that, I think there's always this, as an entrepreneur or a business person, there's always this temptation to engage in a hype cycle because, you know, it draws attention and in a way that's not always helpful. And so you get a lot of people, you know, jumping on bandwagons. I mean, Cognito's been around long enough that, you know, we've, you know, been through the big data bandwagon.
Yes.
and it's all useful stuff, but often what it's just doing is, you know, maybe a slightly more efficient or slightly more effective way of doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, yeah, and so... Because, you know, so I think that the really interesting thing is, okay, what's truly new that's enabled by a new technology idea?
Mm-hmm.
But then I think the other part to this is it's just still, at the end of the day, much better to think about things from a user point of view than think about things from a technology push point of view. Like at Cogito, you know, our big focus is on helping people have more effective conversations and particularly helping frontline phone professionals be more effective at scale. So what we think about is always what do our users need, right?
Yes.
We don't think about how do we push AI on them or how, you know, we'll use AI if it makes sense. We'll use speech science. We use behavioral science. We write software that's designed as well as we're able to do it. You know, this is a much better perspective, I think, for software designers.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's like, your approach is—it feels a bit more like that you're providing a tool to help to enable people, rather than providing a piece of technology to replace people.
Yeah, we are, and that's a choice, you know.
Yeah,
I think because from a principal's perspective for our company, we just really like these win-win-wins.
Yeah,
we just like them a lot.
That's fantastic. So, Josh. Mm-hmm. So within all of that, and kind of you're in the middle of the maelstrom of the kind of the EQ AI sort of thing, surfing that wave, blah mm-hmm. blah. You're building a business at the same time. What are the big challenges? What's the next big thing for Cogito? I mean, you've got your hands full, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously an exciting time. I mean, you know, we're very focused on our customers. I mean, our customers have, you know, many tens of thousands of people on the front line.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to do to help as large portion of our customers, as many of these frontline issues as they can. We're taking on more customers, although we always quite careful about who we take on as a customer.
Yeah.
because we like to stay focused and make sure that the work is of the highest possible quality. And then, you know, for ourselves, we're, you know, also focused on growing our own organization to meet the demand that's out there, which, you know, organizational growth is. And so we help our customers change, but we have to change ourselves. So those are really where we focus.
Excellent. So my next question was, you know, around this idea of like, well, if there's anybody listening out there who's a manager, executive, entrepreneur, leader in a big organization, and they want to, they like this idea of about exploring the use of AI, you know, emotional intelligence, and how you can smash all those things together to help frontline agents improve service and experience. I mean, where's the best place for them to start? I mean, how do your clients normally start on their journey towards using an application like yours? Is that a sort of a standard sort of thought process, or is it just random?
It's actually generally really really straightforward. So generally how it starts is that there's a manager of a big operation who's charged by the CEO or by that organization to improve their customer satisfaction scores or their, you know, customer retention scores, and they may find that in their particular industry they are either not ranked as highly as they would like to be, or
right,
they are very highly ranked but they'd like to extend that lead. And typically, you know, they would generally find that they've been able to squeeze everything they can out of policies and procedures already.
Right.
Right. So they've already tried, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. And And generally, where we come in is we can say, look, here is something that you can do that is different and clearly going to be effective, right? Because the nice thing about, from our perspective for right now, is generally people haven't tried improving how everybody speaks.
Right.
I generally focus very much again on sort of efficiencies and getting data to an agent in a way that allows them to solve the customer problem, all which is wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get that next level then this is what happens. So generally, we're working with organisations that already have some things in place, have already been able to make some substantial achievement, in operating at scale, and then they're saying, okay, how do we get to the next level?
Okay, that's cool. So now, I just wanted to, because I'm just keeping an eye on time, kind of, Josh, but if I may, I want to ask you another couple of kind of questions, but these are kind of questions where I want to sort of turn the tables a little bit, and less about you, and I just want to get your, well, these questions I've been asking at the end of these podcasts for the last kind of one since I started, but also the last one since I started, but the next one is my own piece of, if you like, ongoing market research. Because last year, I wrote this book called How to Wow, which I'm pleased to say became a bit of a bestseller, which is very nice. Makes my mum and dad really proud. But I'd like to ask you, it was on sort of service and experience, but I'd like to ask you for your perspective on what is wow service or wow experience to you?
Yeah, no, really good question. For me, wow service experience is when you call in and you feel that the person you're talking to is really listening to you and really empathizing with you. And it feels for you as the customer that this is like a fresh interaction for that person, right?
Right, okay.
So you don't need to know that they've just done 50 calls with the same question, right? So you, it feels personal and sort of caring.
Yes.
And for me, that's the wow.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
And that brings me to my final question, Josh, that I always ask at the end of these podcasts, and this is it. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Thank you for the opportunity. I would love to shamelessly plug my company and my company's services, and I would love to plug them to large organizations that are looking to achieve the next level in customer service and would like to improve those net promoter scores, and need like a nice, reliable way to do it that doesn't involve completely re-engineering their entire business. And so that's I would like to plug our services in that regard.
Perfect. Josh, that's been, thank you so much for that, and I'll make sure I get that all edited up and linked up and give you guys a big shout out, because I think it's a really interesting and fascinating and probably for the people that are sat on the front line, very enriching kind of way of, it enriches their daily lives, which I think can only be a good thing. One, I want to congratulate you on the science, and two, on the impact, but also just to say thank you for your time and sharing your experience with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Adrian. It was a real pleasure.